I would like to mention chroma, lights designed for humans. Chroma, a Seattle-based innovator founded by ex-NASA and Air Force engineer Michael Shapiro, is on a mission to enhance physical and mental health with purpose-built devices, unlocking peak human health, cognitive function, and performance. Shapiro launched Chroma to restore the natural light lost to screens in indoor living and delivers faster recovery, sharper minds, and better sleep. Their products hit hard. The Iron Forge speeds muscle repair with red and near-infrared light, while the Skylight mimics sunlight to boost sleep and energy. A standout, the Forge Lamp, is a portable gem that fires 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer light to energize mitochondria and heal tissues on the go. Remember the four red light chromophores on cytochrome C oxidase, frequently talked about in the podcast. This is why. Their products are built with military grade durability that have lasting impact. Chroma's tech fuses precision and power. Gallium titride power supplies, smaller, cooler, and stronger than silicone, provide flicker-free light that's easy on the eyes. High-powered LEDs target key wavelengths for skin, tissue, and cellular health with smart heat management for the lasting impact. Every design decision Chroma makes serves a purpose: to create devices that are precise, durable, and effective for improving human life. Remember, humans use different wavelengths of light for different functions of life. Remember when I ask, what do you think light is? Chroma designs with our biology in mind, from sleep aids and wound healing to mitochondrial energy, full body lights and blue light blocking glasses. They are US made and Chroma ships globally and accepts FSA and HSA payments. Use autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. That's autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. For today's episode, we will cover spindle neurons, sometimes called von Economo neurons, named after the person discovering these special types of neurons, Konstantin von Economo, in the mid-1920s. Von Economo was studying human cortical tissue at the time, and he described these elongated, spindle-shaped cells. These are much different than the pyramidal cells. And interestingly, he discovered these in the anterior cingulate cortex, the ACC. We've talked about the ACC in great lengths on several episodes. And in the insula cortex, or the insular cortex, another region of interest for us on the podcast. Now, this is interesting to me because this is the hub. These two regions are the hub that make up the salience network, also discovered as being implicated in autism. Remember the study from UCLA published last year, about 1 year ago now, that found at 6 weeks old, autistic babies have an impaired salience network, connections to and from. And if you're just listening, you're thinking, well, they're at 6 weeks old. One, they use functional connectivity. So they use this imaging at UCLA. They have these equipments. They're equipped to do this. And second thing is, they have a high likelihood group and a typical likelihood group. So they were able to follow these 6 weeks old children, these babies, up until 2-3 years old to see and track their autistic phenotype, to see if this came true. Now with the research, sometimes they are called spindle neurons, and sometimes they are just called von Economo neurons, sometimes VEN. I'm going to mostly say spindle neurons, I believe. The reason why they're spindle neurons is because they are like a cylinder, like a soda can shape. These are nearly twice the size of those pyramidal neurons. You can see some pictures, some images of these, if just doing a quick Google search. These are large cells. And the ideal is they allow for rapid communication. We've also talked about monosynaptic connections, a direct connection from cell to cell. For instance, melanopsin in the retina to the SCN in the hypothalamus, our master clock. That is monosynaptic, meaning it does not have to connect using synapses to travel from point A to point B. This also allows for rapid communication. So the ideal is that these type of rare cells are doing essentially the same thing, faster communication from point A to point B. And also, it appears that the main thing, this main action, response, activity for the spindle neurons are social behaviors. Very interesting again. So von Economo discovered, I guess you will, we'll credit him for the discovery of these spindle neurons in the 1920s. And then research kind of stops on these special types of neurons until mid-late 90s, year 2000 or so, when a guy named John Allman kind of so-called rediscovers them and starts to study these. Now, one guess I have is these spindle neurons are less dense. There are very few of them in these two regions of our body, the ACC and the insula. They are not just heavily populated. So this might be difficult for people to go and search. It might be difficult for people to think that these cells have significance. So we have the interesting fact that these cells are only in the ACC and insula, the two major hubs that make up the salience network. Okay, we'll speak more about the salience network in a minute. And also, the second interesting point are these cells appear to only be used for social behaviors. Okay. Now, the third interesting point right away is these cells, so far, they have only been found in very few species, mostly larger primates, and a few cetaceans, so-called cetaceans, which are dolphins and whales. So very social creatures, mind you. That's really what sticks out here. These larger primates that can sustain their species and be more developed and evolved and have a pretty good social structure. Okay, let's talk about some structure of this actual spindle neuron a bit. So they are larger. They are bipolar, okay? They're spindle-shaped cell bodies. Remember, they're kind of cylinder. And they have very minimal dendrites. Remember, we've talked about some dendrites in the dorsal striatum. Remember, we was talking with Dr. Hannah Stevens from University of Iowa. The cells for autistics in the dorsal striatum, which is where our motivations and movements converge. And not motivations that you might think, but the motivations of the central nervous system trying to respond. Remember, we just respond without the use of this higher order top-down processing. And this is what we're kind of getting to here anyways, with the top-down processing and just evaluating the self with that salience network. The dorsal striatum, the cells here for autistics have very dense dendrites. So it's kind of the opposite here. Now, the difference between the dendrites and typical brain and autistic brains are not known to me right now. And another factor is the cortex of the human brain. We have layers, 6 layers. And the ideal is these are layered on top of each other like crepes. The spindle neurons are found in layer 5. These cells, the spindle neurons, are mostly monoamine, dopamine and serotonin. In addition, some of them can express neuropeptide Y. Neuropeptide Y is very crucial. It's a very dynamic little molecule, similar to kind of vasopressin and oxytocin. And it has roles with like fear buffering, fear modulation, social bonding, energy, metabolism, food intake, and helping determine physiology, like breathing and breath rate, and heart rate. Okay, so that's just a brief summary of neuropeptide Y. It's 36 amino acids. Remember, oxytocin and vasopressin were only 9 proteins. So the von Economo spindle neurons come on board roughly 4 months to 35 weeks of gestation. So it's kind of mid to late time frame of the in utero. And they last, they build up in humans for the essentially the first 4 years of life for humans. And this really captures that social network and social skills, social learning, and just bringing in all of the source of social information here. So another thing that kind of captures the role, the specific role with social behaviors, in addition to the serotonin and dopamine and that neuropeptide Y even. So with their unique roles, it really equips the human brain with specialized functions here that that humans and these other larger primates are utilizing. So just briefly on these other mammals with larger brains and larger primates and so forth. It is estimated that between the ACC and the insula. Now, let's just break this insula into regions here. We're going to be talking about the anterior, or sometimes called the frontal insula. This is more of the seat of the salience network. So if I say insula, it's more this front region. So humans have roughly 100,000 to 200,000 in these two regions here. Also found are great apes, such as chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans. And they are also found in monkeys, no surprise, and the cetaceans. Okay. These would include things like humpback whale, fin, sperm, and killer whales, as well as some dolphins, different types of dolphins. Now, it leads me to believe that perhaps these special cells, these spindle neurons, are in more and more underwater creatures, especially deeper into the oceans and so forth. In addition, they are found in some elephants. Some signs that they are in elephants, African and Asian elephants. And then even more recently, perhaps they are in manatees and things like giraffes and hippopotamus. But remember, these are not very dense populations of cells. So they are, I guess, harder to discover. And in 2008, there was a third region in the human brain that appears to have these special spindle neurons. And that's the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex. And these are extremely rare in here. Clusters of two. So very hard to search and find. So let's talk about the Salience Network. We've had a couple of episodes. We had Autism and Adaptive Responses, where we kind of parsed out the medial prefrontal cortex, which includes the ACC and the insula. And then we also had another episode about autism and the insula. So we've covered these two regions. So the Salience Network is no surprise. It brings our attention to that topic, to that area of interest within the living organism. It determines relevant stimuli, and then it integrates the sensory. We've talked about sensory integration in quite great detail, even with the neurulation and the mesencephalon. Huge in the mesencephalon is sensory integration. The Salience Network also helps determine emotional and cognitive information to guide our attention, that decision-making, and behavior. Remember, we are predicting machines, okay? And we are constantly using internal calculators, biological calculators. And this is a big data input here for that process, the so-called Salience Network, but really specifically the ACC and the anterior region of the insula. Some significant connections here would include the amygdala, the ventral striatum, which includes the nucleus accumbens. Now, the nucleus accumbens is a very powerful little brain region here. It also connects to the substantia nigra and the ventral tegmental area, so hot spots for dopamine. Remember the substantia nigra in the basal ganglia episodes and the Parkinson episode, where we can break this down into two subdivisions. The reticulata, which is GABA, and pars compacta, which is the dopamine. And also remember Dr. Reza Shadmir talking about that as well to us. And the Salience Network also connects to the thalamus, of course, the sensory relay hub, and the hypothalamus. So huge subcortical areas here. So the salience detection is a role here that's defined more as a identifying stimuli from the environment that could be a threat or a social cue, or it could help assign our priority. Remember, that's what we're doing. We're predicting and using internal calculators and then just prioritizing our needs. The metabolic bank accountant. The brain is allocating while conserving brain energy, biological energy. The Salience Network also is involved with network switching. This is a very big one. This is how I kind of was introduced to the insula and the Salience Network some years ago, because of this network switching. Because it's kind of the fulcrum of, on one side, you have the default mode network. Remember the autism and the default mode network episode. This is heavily researched in autism. And on the other side of that, though, is the executive network. This goal-directed task that makes us really unique species. Well, sort of. This is also some reasons why we are very harmful to ourselves. So that's debatable. If we're only humans say that we're the top species on Earth, the top living organism, when reality is, well, we would probably be 12 to 15. Because we harm ourselves so much. Another role is the social and emotional processing. So the Salience Network can help facilitate the empathy. And remember Sir Simon Baron Cohen's theory of mind from 1985. Largely false. Largely false, and really set autism research back. Set a narrative about autism. So this helps us with the social decisions. And interoceptive. the interoceptive integration. Then this is a large thing of what the insula itself is doing. But also some ACC because of that powerful internal calculator with adaptive responses and decision making, the conflict monitoring, and so forth. Interoception is here. The insula is unique because it's evaluating, receiving information from the brain about different brain states, such as valence even. It's receiving information from the body, bodily states, and physiology. So how's my breathing? The rate and the depth? How's my heart rate? How's my gut feedback? Am I sweating? Am I comfortable in this environment at this moment? And so forth. And the third data point is the environment. So it's the insula receives all information about the living organism in that space and time domain. This is why the insula is very cool. And based off of that, it has autonomic regulation, right? The central nervous system, sympathetic and parasympathetic. This salience network is kind of hinging on that. So the salience network is recruiting and activating things and inactivating things, shutting things off. And it's just kind of conducting this for us in real time and in planning even. So the ACC, the frontal insula, the anterior region, and this so-called salience network, it's not only using the spindle neurons, though, so it's hard to parse out what is doing what within this kind of network. However, with the spindle neurons, it seems to be that they are central to the process and respond to that salient stimuli that helps the larger size and long projections to enable that rapid communication. Remember, the larger cells, it can travel from point A to point B faster. And if you think about the time scales that humans are on, am I good? Am I not good? Am I good? Am I not good? What do I need now? And so forth. It's very rapid and it's pretty constant. The brain is always evaluating, what do I need? And how few of that can I use while remaining within homeostasis, the unique comfort of the living organism? I would like to take a moment and mention a pressing issue we are seeing in our modern world. And that is tech use and tech light. The data are impressive and concerning on isolated wavelengths of light, especially shorter wavelengths, which is blue light. For those that don't know, we have chromophores, which are special proteins that absorbs specific wavelengths of light. For blue light, the light that is LED light and tech light, that protein is called melanopsin. Melanopsin is responsible for our circadian biology, physiology and cell functioning, hormone regulation, and even a connection to an area huge for mood. A consideration we should include is this protein was not even discovered until 1998. It seems important for us to understand how our biology uses the different wavelengths of light for various aspects of our biology. This blue light chromophore is our master controller, our master clock. Remember, circadian rhythm is a two-part process, two independent parts, light and dark. For a quick reference, see, the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. But for now, I have something exciting. I want to introduce a product unlike any other product available. A highlight is the product from Daylight Computer Company created their product based on these factors. The Daylight Computer is completely blue light free. It has no flicker. Short wavelength flicker is extremely harmful for our eyes and downstream biology. Light flicker is constantly turning our central nervous system on and off. Essentially, it is like going to a light switch and repeatedly turning it on and off. The problem is, blue light and LED light does this. And it is so rapid, you cannot even perceive this in real time. The Daylight Computer is the lowest stimulation and foremost for sensory sensitive users. It is no question that the alternative product, especially when used at night, do not address or consider this in their product. It is so toxic to human biology. Big tech corporations have patents on how their short wavelength implicate the human nervous system. And a bonus, despite Daylight Computer not having backlight, it is very functional for outdoor use. And of course, increased sunlight is always preferred. I am happy to offer a discount for the Daylight Computer. You can use the code AUTISM for a $25 off coupon. Again, use the code AUTISM and the discount code for $25 off. See the link in the show notes to Daylight Computer Company, or just give it a quick search in your internet browser. Use the code AUTISM for $25 off. So what kind of diseases and conditions has these spindle neurons been linked to? So autism is one. Frontotemporal dementia is one. Remember, that kind of has a loss of empathy and the social behavior is a little abnormal. Schizophrenia, no surprise if autism is going to be there. Schizophrenia has a better chance of showing up. So that salience, misunderstanding and that social withdrawal linked to the reduced spindle neuron density and Alzheimer's disease. So that late stage in Alzheimer's, very sad situation, and the emotional deficits appear to be, at least in some part, related to the spindle neurons, and also suicide. So emotional dysregulation tied to those loss or lack of spindle neurons. Now, that's not the main data of the episode. That's just a brief summary of how these are interacting. So the spindle neurons and autism. Okay, so postmortem studies show increased spindle neuron density in the anterior insula of children with autism from age 4 to 14. So this is tied to, the ideal here is, it's tied to that early brain overgrowth. So they're just filling in that population and that space and time. While adult studies show no significant difference. So often in times with the enlarged brain of the early autistic, it kind of, I don't want to say fixes itself, but it kind of does. The older brains learn to prune its population better, keep up with pruning and the size and its needs better than the autistic children. And the salience network, the connectivity here using the spindle neurons is altered. Hyperconnectivity between the anterior insula and the sensory regions and causes sensory hypersensitivity, a very big problem in autism. We've covered other areas responsible for this, such as the midbrain and the sensory processing episode see part two of that, where we really parse out studies and using instruments like the N100 and the M100 and the fMRI machine, where it shows information is getting to the midbrain area faster in autistics than typical developed. But downstream, it loses its energy and it has a slower connection to those downstream areas, like the cortical areas. And also with the spindle neurons in autistic subjects, there's a hypoconnectivity, no surprise. This is very common in the prefrontal regions. And this implicates that social cognition, that social skills, and the social behavior, learning to do these, learning the social cues. Remember the eye contact. Eyes to the superior colliculus to the frontal eye fields. And from the superior colliculus to the thalamus. The superior colliculus and the thalamus are right next to each other. They can essentially just reach out and high-five each other. And this determines eye, psychotic eye movements, and eye attention. Big problem here. But then downstream, you add this to it. Big problem. And don't forget, one of the roles of the salience network is that network switching. Right? It's acting as a fulcrum. If it's on a teeter-totter or a seesaw, balancing, activating and inactivating the default mode network and the executive functioning. And remember the autism and adaptive responses episode. That is essentially covering this. The inability to adapt appropriately in social situations. It's stuck in this internal world. It's stuck in that default mode network. The autistic phenotype prefers the default mode network. It's inter-world. Remember the insula, everything we just talked about today on the insula. This is the autistic phenotype. If you're listening to the podcast, listening to the episode, please feel free to leave a review or rating. In podcasting, reviews, ratings, and downloads are huge. And I very much appreciate your feedback. You can contact me on X at RPS47586. Just look for the podcast. And we can have any conversation about autism that you wish. I'm always happy to discuss autism with anybody that wants to. You can check out the YouTube channel for full-length videos and shorts and clips. You can email me info.fromthespectrum@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to From the Spectrum Podcast.